As somebody who both attended and for many years taught in rabbinical school, I can tell you that one of the constant laments, one of the constant complaints of seminaries is that there is not time to teach all the subjects that rabbis are supposed to learn. We have to teach rabbis Torah and Talmud and history and Hebrew and Israel and administration and a little fundraising and counseling and on and on and on. It just proliferates. And there's always a debate between how much of this do you give and how much of that do you give. And of course, there's never enough time in a 5 or 6 year graduate school to teach everything that in theory a rabbi is supposed to know. But I want you to know that in all of the curricula debates that I sat through about what we should teach, nobody ever said, and of course we have to teach them about nuclear enrichment. And yet, you would be amazed how many people say, so Rabbi, who's right about nuclear enrichment? And you are expected to pronounce on it as a rabbi, even though a moment's thought would give both you and the questioner the realization that you know nothing about nuclear plants or nuclear enrichment other than what you read in the newspaper yesterday, probably written by someone who doesn't know much more than you do. And that there really are very few people who can, with any authority, address the question of what constitutes restraint, enhancement, a promise for the future. It's not an easy question. And so, because that is the question on the table, when they called me from APAC, where I'm flying tomorrow to the conference, and said, during our two luncheons for our givers, the Capital Club and I think the Washington Club or the Seneca, I don't remember what it's called, would you speak to them? I thought, what am I going to talk to them about? I can't express an opinion about who's right about the nuclear deal because it would be no more informed than the people I'm talking to, and in some cases, less informed. And I would be using my cloak as a rabbi to express my personal opinion and to give it illegitimate authority. One other thing, by the way, that they did not teach us in rabbinical school was international diplomacy. And so if I said who was right and who was wrong, it also would be no more informed than the people I'm talking to. Although I think I can say, in the various configurations and fights between the administration, the Republicans, and Israel, that none of them come out looking all that good. And that I can say with good rabbinic authority. So what do you talk about? And while I'm not going to give the speech now that I'm going to give then, mostly because I haven't written it yet, and you're kind of my guinea pigs, but I thought I would try it out on you first, I want to at least tell you the themes. I thought, what as a rabbi can I actually say with some authority that matters about what's going on in the world? And I thought that I could essentially say three things that we learn from Jewish history and from the Jewish present that is informed by the tradition and even by this time of year that really matters. The first thing is what I read just yesterday in an interview with Aharon Appelfeld, the Israeli writer. He's a survivor of the Holocaust, and his family was wiped out in the Holocaust, and he escaped, and he hid, and he was taken in by a family and survived and came to Israel and became one of Israel's greatest writers. And he said one thing he learned very early was that there was a difference between evil and demonic evil. He said, to kill someone is evil. To torture them and kill them, that's demonic evil. That's evil that doesn't just have a bad aim, but delights in destruction and pain for its own sake. Now, I know that we already knew this, but anybody who has followed the news in the past weeks and months, and I'm tempted to say years, knows that much of the world is actually captured by demonic evil, not just by evil. The kind of demonic evil that I think we've not seen since the middle of the 20th century. The kind of evil that wants to destroy part of civilization, not just to establish its own. I know that wrecking old Assyrian statues is not the worst thing one could do. But when you have this need to wipe out the remnants of a civilization that is already dead, there are no Assyrians left in the world. And nobody is worshiping their statues. And somehow, we have conspired as human beings to preserve these monuments to a dead civilization for thousands of years. And today someone has to take a hammer and a drill to them to destroy them. That's not just evil. It's demonic. It's terrifying. And Jews, who have seen all gradations of evil through our thousands of years, from the most genteel to the most demonic, we have a certain responsibility to remind the world over and over again of exactly what it is that we're facing. The second is that we are engaged then in a civilizational war, and even though there are at this moment certain powers whose disposition is uncertain where they will come down in this war, we know who is on one side. And here, it's really important for everyone, but especially American Jews, to look past individuals and personalities and recognize that nations have long-term interests. And the long-term interests of America and Israel are virtually identical. I don't care who the prime minister and the president is. I mean, I care, but I don't care. I don't care if they get along or they don't get along. Again, I care, but I don't care. The fact is, when you ask what nations are unalterably opposed to that demonic evil, the first entries in the column are America and Israel. There are others. But there are some nations whose place in that column is uncertain. We don't know over the next 10, 20, 30 years where Europe will be. We don't know. We don't know today where some of the nations in the Middle East are. But we know where Israel is, and we know where America is, and that's incredibly important. And so we have to be very careful, not to identify Israel and Judaism with one party or one view, and only to identify it with America. With America. Because we have to make our case to every American, not just one view. To every party, not just one. Be very careful and see the long-term game, not the short-term game. America and Israel, not America and this view. Not Israel and that party. America and Israel. That's, by the way, why AIPAC exists. It is to connect every senator, congressman, official with the reality that Israel is the great ally not only of America, but of American values, in the Middle East and in the world. And if you know anything about history, you know that administrations change in every democracy, and views change, but fundamental interests remain the same. There will never be a time when Israel's interests and America's interests will be aligned with the interests of people who could do things like destroy Syrian statues and behead journalists. There will never be a time. So that's the second lesson. And the third lesson comes in a beautiful and poignant story about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. In 1956, in Kfar Chabad in Israel, four students and a teacher were slaughtered by Arab terrorists. And it was a different age. It wasn't on the news. It wasn't covered all over. Maybe it was in the newspaper, but it wasn't a giant. There was no social media. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. People didn't communicate instantaneously, and so they sent a telegram to Chabad headquarters in Brooklyn saying what happened, and then they awaited the response from the Rebbe. So what do you say to that? Now remember, this was an age in which brevity was prized, not because you had to put your response on Twitter, but because you had to put it in a telegram, and telegrams were very expensive. And the Rebbe sent back a telegram with three words: "Behemshech habnia yinachem." In the continuation of building, you will be comforted. In other words, the proper response to destruction is to build. The only response to plans to annihilate dreams is to continue to dream. And our efforts and our resources and our children have to be dedicated to building both this country and Israel, because that is the only possible way that we will survive. That's our task. It is easy and satisfying and important to be a critic. And I don't know a Jew who's not a critic. I promise you, if I asked you afterwards, all of you would be full of disapproval for one person or another, or one view or another, and some of your disapproval, no doubt, I would share. But that doesn't build anything. Building builds things. Contributions build things. Effort builds things. Criticism, not so much. And so, especially in the face of a crisis, we have to try to figure out, how do we build better? Not how do we contribute to the divisiveness, but how do we bring our nations back together? Who is it, and how is it, that is promising to do something important, constructive, long-lasting? We all know, I hope, that there never has been a nation in the history of the world comparable to the United States of America. There has never been. And that's true in many ways. But one of the ways that that manifests itself today is that in poll after poll after poll, America is unbelievably supportive of the state of Israel all across the board. 70, 80, 90%, depending on how you ask the question. And that's not because AIPAC exists. It's because America is what it is and Israel is what it is. Nations founded on certain ideas and ideals. What AIPAC does is to remind people that it's true. And that's what we should be doing, all of us, in every venue we can. That we are founded on ideals of freedom, of religion, of speech, of assembly, of voting, all the things that make a modern democracy, and that that's precisely what it is that our enemies wish to destroy. V'hemshech habnia yinachem. In continuing to build, we will prevail. Not just be comforted, but prevail. That's a message that is actually supported by our tradition, comes out of our tradition, and is essentially the message of Purim and the holiday that follows it of Pesach. That there is evil in the world, that evil is real, that it is persistent, but that it can be overcome, and that we can survive. How that plays out, we don't yet know. But we have faith that it is true, and that we will. Shabbat Shalom.